The future of farming is about many things. Yes, obviously, as we were just hearing, it's about the health of the land, but also about the farmer themselves. We might not be aware of this, but the conversation in this country about the difficulties of finding the next generation of farmers is one that is actually happening right the way across Europe, not just here. There are more older farmers, fewer younger farmers, and an anxiety about generational renewal. Who will be farming the land in the next generation? Dr. Emma Dillon is a senior researcher at Chagask, and she joins me now from our Athlone studio. Good morning to you, Emma.
Good morning, Philip.
The urgency around this issue comes from the age profile of Irish farmers. Can you remind us, please, of what the numbers are there right now?
Yeah, so I suppose just to say that the Irish figures are in line with the EU average, but there are some countries who have a younger age structure. So in Ireland, one third of farmers are aged over 65, and the average farmer age, according to the National Farm Survey, is 58. So there are some differences there across farm systems, with dairy farmers tending to be younger and having younger household members. I suppose a startling figure from the National Farm Survey in recent years is that 3 in 4 farmers have been the main farm operator for more than 20 years. And I suppose this is reflective of the ageing labour force more generally, but certainly it is an issue.
And I think it's 5% under the age of 35, isn't it? And the difference between now and 30 years ago is that, you know, back then farming was a very, very attractive, perhaps the most attractive option if you were lucky enough to be born onto a farm. But there are so many more attractive options for people off the farm today.
Certainly. I think it's true to say that there are opportunities in the wider economy that weren't there previously. They have improved dramatically, and there is more potential to earn a relatively high income compared to some farm systems. And also the fact that people tend to stay in education longer, and this delays them entering the workforce, and then as a consequence, perhaps delays them taking over a farm.
I think one of the very interesting things about your research, your and Jason Lockery's research, is the different picture within each of the sectors. Can you break it down for me, please, and tell us what's happening on dairy farms, on sheep farms, on dry stock farms?
So within the National Farm Survey, we have asked the question in recent years about whether or not a farmer has identified a successor. And on average, 6 in 10 farmers have done that. But it does differ across farm systems, as you say. And I suppose the recent paper highlights the nuanced nature of farm succession, and that it's not just about economic performance, but we also need to take account of the social factors. So one of the key findings that's getting some attention is the fact that viability was not a key driver on cattle farms. And that is to say, when the farmer was asked if there was a successor in place, those operating less viable farm systems were more likely to have a successor, likely on a part-time basis. Now, there are two caveats around that. They were asked their opinion as to whether or not they had identified a successor, but there was no formal agreement in place. So we'll need to revisit to see, did that actually happen? And I should also say that viability should be a key objective of our agricultural policy, and that we need to strive to improve viability. And finally, the year the data was collected was a particularly challenging year in terms of farm incomes, so there was a higher proportion of farms deemed unviable. But it's true to say that there are different factors at play across other systems. And in terms of potential succession on dairy farms, issues around work-life balance and stress and the presence of young people in the household were key factors. So some viable dairy farms had not identified a successor. So it is quite a nuanced situation.
OK, but on the whole, had the dairy farms got this as well sorted out as those smaller suckler farms in the west of the country?
They were generally in line, and I would say that we see more evidence of farm partnerships and younger people being involved on dairy farms. Because it's a viable career option to support a farm family on a more full-time basis, they tend to be more commercially orientated on average. And so we see on dairy farms younger people providing labour. And you were talking to the dairy farmer there a few moments ago, particularly at, you know, busy times of the year with that seasonal workload.
So where are the problems arising then? By a process of elimination, that suggests that it's the larger dry stock farms or sheep farms that haven't got succession plans in place.
I suppose it's true to say that there is a delay around succession on some of those farms. And a lot of those farms potentially will be continued on a part-time basis. And Chagask engages with graduates, and in a recent survey looking back at graduates who graduated 5 years ago, 90% of those graduates are still involved in farming, but an increasing proportion on a part-time basis. And interestingly, we asked the question around whether or not the move to remote working would facilitate succession on farms, and it was on the smaller farms that that seemed more likely. So it's a very complex pattern and a very complex picture, with differences around family dynamics and family tradition, and the fact that some potential successors are well established in well-paying jobs away from the farm.
We spoke to two farmers farming in partnership very recently, an arrangement that had been set up through Land Mobility Services. And one of the things that really struck me about it was that the energy and the dynamism of a young progressive farmer coming into a big farm meant that that farm was entirely abreast, indeed ahead of, all of the environmental regulations, and it was an absolute, you know, poster pin-up of a farm in that respect. Is there a danger where you don't have succession plans worked out, that there's a tranche or a cohort of farms that might fall behind in that respect?
Certainly, research from across Europe would indicate that younger farmers display a better willingness to take on new technologies and adapt to the changing policy environment, and particularly around environmental sustainability. But it is difficult to generalise. What I would say is that with the presence of a young person there, there is some foresight around the future, the continuation of the farm, and some optimism there. And also the opportunity to invest more heavily on the farm due to the presence of, you know, grant aid through TAMS or the different incentives that are there to facilitate young people entering farming. And also, if younger people are involved on the farm at an earlier stage, it makes diversification options potentially more feasible and more likely. So this whole model of farm partnerships is a very good one in terms of sharing the knowledge and ensuring the continuation and productivity and viability of those farms.
How big a stumbling block to proper farm succession is our inability to start this conversation within families?
Certainly, it's a difficult conversation to have, and it's not surprising that it is a conversation that is somewhat delayed and, you know, postponed. But I think that if farmers are considering this, and if it's a source of concern to them, that they should start the discussion, be that with some of their family or their peers, and that there are lots of supports and advice available to them through Chagask and through other organisations. And it's fair to say that these conversations are being had at kitchen tables all around the country. And we see that with the number of people who are engaging with the Transferring the Family Farm clinics that Chagask run every year. Close to 1,300 people attended those last autumn. So it's a difficult decision, but there is guidance there and lots of opportunities in terms of incentives for the young person and also for the farmer who potentially would like to exit.
And I don't want to end on I don't like to end on a negative here, but it is important to consider this. What happens if we don't get this right?
I think it is a challenge, but I think it's really positive that we're discussing it. And, you know, the Irish CAP strategic plan has numerous measures there to support young farmers, taxation reliefs, access to finance. And certainly there is scope to improve the incentive for the older farmer who would like to exit. And the Department of Agriculture have recently established a commission on the matter, of which I am part. And we are currently examining the evidence, and we're grateful to all those stakeholders who have submitted information through the public consultation. So I think we're informing ourselves with the evidence, and we will hopefully come up with some new options around the future.
And what is the timeline on the delivery or the presentation of those options? How soon do you expect us to be able to cast an eye over them?
Well, we're working to a June deadline, so hopefully our report will be ready then, Philip.
All right. Thank you very much, Emma Dillon. Emma Dillon, Senior Researcher at Chagask, joining us there from our Athlone studio.